Maybe the theme of this whole first episode of the Nugget Cast is make sure you have a plan B. And here are some nuggets to help you prepare to have a plan B.
Hey, today's podcast, we're going to talk about nuggets. We called it the Nugget Cast. And before we get into this with AJW, we want to tell you about a nugget that Don and I have learned and many of you have learned, and that is Path Projects makes great gear.
And one of those golden nuggets, Scott, is Path Projects and their gear and how well it fits and how well it works for the distance. And to prove that, they have a blog spot on their website about the Kokodona 250 and some of their team members that ran this thing in the gear and how it held up. Great pictures. Go check it out.
And what gear did they choose? Path Projects, because it's good. And they spent 5 days in this gear.
And whether you're going for shorts, headwear, baseliners, accessories, shirts, or you want a gift card for one of your friends coming up, that's the place to go. Go check them out. Free U.S. shipping on orders of $50 or more.
Go to pathprojects.com and check out their gear. Don't check it out. Buy some stuff.
This episode brought to you by Picky Bars. It's real, balanced, and tasty. And Scott, I want to tell you about the Picky Club box that showed up to my house that had all my favorite things in it. Dug through, found out some things I hadn't had before. Love each and one of them. My favorite is the Performance Oatmeal, the Trail Fix. So good.
I've had the Picky Bars before, and what I've really fallen in love with is the Picky Bars Performance Granola. Right now on my desk, no joke, I have the Ready to Rumble Apple Crumble, and this is my favorite, the Call of the Wild Blueberry. Not only can you get a discount by going to pickybars.com/TRN, the deal for Nation members is 20% off any order of $25 or more, but here's the best deal. Their Picky Club that Don just talked about is an additional 30% off of those, and you get free deliveries automatically. Go to pickybars.com/TRN and use the code TRN for that 20% off. How can you feel more confident and take control of your financial life? You need to look into a coach for your finances. We recommend Doug Crumley. Coach Crumley is with Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, LLC. His team of financial coaches are there to help you with regularly scheduled meetings and a suite of digital tools that can help track your progress. Doug, what is a number one comment you hear from your clients?
The number one comment that I hear from clients after they've completed, you know, their first year with us is they wish they had started doing this when they were in their 20s and 30s. That is such a common wish that people had done, and yet it's never too late.
How do we get a hold of you, Doug?
I think probably the easiest way is to visit our website at DougCrumleyJR.com. That's Doug, CrumleyJR.com.
Ladies and gentlemen of the wide, worldwide ultra running community, you are listening to nothing less than the greatest Trail Running Nation podcast on earth. It is the Trail Runner Nation podcast.
But I know it's on the upper edge, and you guys have won a couple of awards. And
just because the facts aren't accurate, don't worry about it. This is a podcast. This isn't. We don't even have a letterbox. Nobody's gonna write us. We don't even know where it is. I started to question myself. Maybe I'm a badminton player and not a runner.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. This is Andy Jones Wilkins.
I'm Scott War,
and I'm Don Freeman.
And we are kicking off a new series tonight that we know you are going to love. It is called the Golden Nugget Series, or as we like to say in the studio, the Nugget Cast. Every month for the next 12 years, we are going to broadcast a Nugget Cast. What is a Nugget Cast, you ask? Well, a Nugget Cast is when we bring on a guest and they give us their one golden nugget from ultra running, their one piece of wisdom, one word of advice, the one thing that every ultra runner should know to get from the starting line to the finish line. So welcome, everybody, to the first edition of the Nugget Cast. Scott, you got a nugget?
And if it's a one word nugget, it's going to be the shortest podcast episode that we've ever done.
Yeah. Let's straighten some things up. Now, number one, I like the way AJW described this thing. I think it actually sounds more exciting than what I originally envisioned, Scott. And I just like his spin that he has on it. What concerns me is 12 years. That's a lot of nuggets when we start adding them up. But fortunately, there's a lot of guests. And so we know there are a lot of nuggets out there. I'm concerned about only one nugget, though. Some of these guests are going to have more than one nugget, and it's going to be a short show with one nugget. So I'm thinking like a three-nugget show. That's what I'm thinking.
Three nuggets per guest? Three guests, nine nuggets?
No. One guest, and they're going to bring their three best nuggets. Like Carl Metzler may come with three nuggets. So, you know, people are going to get tired of our nuggets, no doubt. And so we're going to have to...
Oh, I think they already are tired of our nuggets.
I'll bet you many of them could predict what they are already.
Can someone trade in these golden nuggets for a golden ticket?
If you use the nuggets, you can obtain a golden ticket if you have some leg speed and you enter the right race. Yeah.
Nice spin.
Or could they trade them in for a UTMB stone?
That's a good one. We'll have to contact Michelle and see if he would trade them in for a stone.
What is the exchange rate? Nugget for stone.
Yeah, no, it might be five nuggets for a stone, you know, at this rate.
Well, we'll hear our nuggets, what we have. But one little caveat with these nuggets that needs to come with a story. You know, there's a reason that you carry this nugget with you. And usually it comes from the school of hard knocks. And so I think what's most interesting is, hey, I learned to carry water after going through a stretch of trail that was 105 degrees, and this is what happened to me. So now I always bring water. Just some story that, and the more embellishment, probably the better the story.
Oh, Scott, that's a wonderful nugget, Don. Bring water. Right. Well, that's almost like that's almost the nugget. Like wear shoes.
Well, you know, we're assessing my level of nuggetness. I have more like gold dust. I don't have any real nuggets.
I do want to say that maybe the most important part of the Nugget Cast, I would argue, is not the nugget, but the story that goes along with the nugget. You know, we love stories. That's what makes a long run enjoyable, is sharing these stories. Some of them may be partially true, partially fictitious, but I think it's the story, and that's what we're going to talk about today. I think we have at least one nugget per person on this episode, and I want to start with Andy Jones Wilkins and see what nugget he has and that story.
But before we get to that, I want to know who the genius was that came up with the term Nugget Cast.
That was Andy.
That was you, Andy. That's a great term. I think we should run with that. The Nugget Cast.
Well, he already called it the Nugget Cast at the beginning.
This is the first episode of the Nugget Cast.
But
we only have 143 more to go.
But Scott, I saw it on a text, so I didn't know as this started to form, the term Nugget Cast came out, and I didn't know who said it first. I know it wasn't me.
You know, at some point we ought to share with the TRN listeners some of our text exchanges. not now, of course, but sometime.
We'll have to edit those, I think.
All right, we're leading with AJW on the first nugget, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
So my nugget starts with, for every 1 minute you spend training your body, spend 2 minutes training your mind. Mm. This nugget comes from none other than Ann Trason, the legendary 14-time winner of Western States. We've had her on the podcast years ago. Ann had many turns of phrase that were really inspirational. But for the most part, and believed that you needed to train your mind twice as much as you train your body. And Anne had a body that was extremely well trained, but she talked about the little mental tricks of running tree to tree or needing to give yourself a mental taper before a big race. And she understood the value of training your mind. Now, the story I have is not from 2005, but is from the year after that at Western States, 2006, where I felt a benefit of that word of wisdom, that nugget of wisdom from Anne that she had shared with me 5 or 6 years earlier. And I had rolled into...
I just want to get a point of reference. 2005 was the year that you came in right behind Scott Jurek. So you came in second that year. And then 2006 was the extremely hot year that we were lucky to have any finishers. Is that right?
That's right. Yes. Do you want to talk a little bit more about 2005?
Oh, sure. No, since you brought it up.
I'm sure you do.
So yes, the year after 2005 was 2006, and it was a very hot year. There was only like a 52% finishers rate. Nonetheless, this is where I learned the truth in Anne's nugget. And it was, I was rolling into Last Chance, which is mile 43, right before you drop into the canyons and you go through the three canyons, you know, Deadwood, El Dorado, and Volcano. And like everybody who goes into Last Chance, I handed the people my bottles and I ate some food and everything else. And the guy who was filling my bottle screwed the top back on, and you know, you screw the top on, and then he hit the top of it, and the top broke off. Completely broke off. Now, mind you, I'm about to run into the canyons with two handheld bottles. And now one, the top is completely broken off. He looked at me and he was like, sorry, and handed me the bottle. I was
let me get this straight, AJW. Your bib says M2 on it that year. Isn't that right? M2.
Yep, M2. Right. Joe Kulak would have preferred it to say L1, but it actually said M2. So anyway, this guy, yes, he broke my bottle. So I had to go down into the canyon with one bottle. And all the way down, I'm just cursing. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is terrible. Now I have one bottle. You know, everybody in their right mind is telling me in my head that this is a disaster. I got to the bottom. I crossed the swinging bridge. I made the left turn. I filled up my one bottle at the spring. And I said, remember Ann Trason's advice. Use this climb up to Devil's Thumb as mental training. So I exercised the demon of the guy who broke my bottle back at Last Chance. And I walked up the climb, walked every step, probably did it 5 to 8 minutes slower than I had hoped to do it, nursing on my one bottle. I got up to Devil's Thumb. I talked to the aid station people. Someone dug out a second bottle from somewhere, and I had two bottles moving forward, and problem solved. But if it hadn't been for Anne's advice to train the mind twice as much as the body, I might have freaked out when that guy broke my bottle. But instead, I just sort of took a deep breath, took my time getting through that canyon, and got out the other side and ended up finishing the race okay.
Well, and to give a little bit more context of why only one water bottle could totally freak you out going into that canyon is, we already mentioned this was a hot year. So one of the things that Western States is known for are these crazy hot years. And when you go into the canyons, these canyons are granite rock that radiate the heat. They don't cool off at night. And so if it's 90 degrees or let's say 95 degrees Fahrenheit at the top of the canyon, it could be 105 degrees Fahrenheit down in the bottom. And this is probably 2,000 vertical feet down, another 2,000 vertical feet up. And so you could really freak out thinking you only have one water bottle to make these massive climbs in that just radiant heat.
Well, and one thing is, even though it's only 4 miles, for conventional wisdom says, even for the fast people, it's going to take you an hour to cover that. And for the middle and back of the pack, it's going to take an hour and a half. And it's, remember, it's mile 43 to 47. So it's hot for everybody. You know, and one of the tactics that a lot of veterans use is they will take one bottle and just use it to pour over their head, you know, and fill it up in a creek and pour, not even plan on drinking it, but fill it over, because anything you can do to stay cool. Because mind you, you're going to get up to mile 47 where it might be 90 degrees, like you said, but now you're about to descend another 5 miles back down to where it's 110 at El Dorado. So if you get behind on keeping yourself cool and keeping yourself hydrated, you're completely screwed by the time you get to Michigan Bluff, which is only mile 55. So all of that was going through my head as my bottle was broken, innocently enough, by this aid station volunteer. And it was only with the mantra of Ann Trason, train the mind, train the mind, train the mind, that I got through that part.
Yeah, but also what you're not sharing with us, that probably all of us has come to our own minds, is the experience and wisdom of, boy, I need to back off. Here's my supply. This is what I have. I better go easy on this, because if I bury myself halfway through this, I'm done. And you can take yourself out for the entire race by making a poor decision in the middle. Even though you're capable of a strong finish, you could sabotage yourself by making a mistake like that. Somebody else's mistake could lead you to what would sabotage your own race. So good on you for having the experience and being able to forecast disaster if you didn't adhere to the new parameters of your race. Scott.
Hey, Andy, so I want to know, how did that, I mean, obviously you made it out of that canyon. How did you feel by slowing down and hiking that uphill, that 2 mile uphill, 2000 vertical foot climb? How did that work for you with that, with that mental?
Yeah. Remember, I was still in a competitive environment. I had at least two people pass me on that climb, so I had dropped back to maybe 11th place or so. So that stressed me out a little bit. I did get that second bottle at Devil's Thumb. I made it through, and I got to Michigan Bluff, and there was my crew. I explained to my crew, which was my wife and kids, everything that happened. They understood. Now I had all fresh bottles. I had all my own stuff. Like, I was able to get my head on straight. But what I've thought about in the intervening 15 years is what a gift that was to have that water bottle broken by that guy. I mean, the next year I finished fourth place and had a very good race and didn't have any problems, and always thought a little bit about, okay, I might need an extra bottle here. I might need to conserve a little bit here. But the memory right now of the experience and the wisdom of Anne's mental training is that's where the lesson is, that it happened to me, that I made it out the other side. You know, I had a good finish that year. It was because it was such a hot year. There were so many people that dropped out. I ended up finishing sixth place, which was a very, very good finish. Don't get me wrong. But it was a struggle all the way to the finish. And I think it was made a little bit more meaningful by getting through that stretch of the course that everyone dreads, the canyons, in a somewhat compromised state.
Hey, I'm going to jump in front of you, Scott. Did one of those two guys, one of the two runners that passed you, did they finish ahead of you at the end of the race? Was there a reason to panic about those two passes on that hill? Were they fifth through first, any of those positions?
Yeah, both of them finished ahead of me. One of them was Graham Cooper, who ultimately won the race, and as a result of Brian Morrison being disqualified. And the other was Eric Skadden, who finished second in the race. So these were two guys we had been running together for quite a bit of the course. We kind of were the experienced people, and Scott Jurek wasn't in the race, and we had finished second, third, and or second, fourth, and fifth the previous year. We knew who we were. We knew the situation, and I just had to take a step back and know that those guys were probably going to beat me, and they did beat me. And I don't blame the guy who broke my bottle for them beating me. You know, it was just something that happens. But yeah, when those two guys passed me on the climb up to Devil's Thumb, when I was intentionally slowing down so that I wouldn't use so much energy, so I wouldn't drink so much water, I felt a little bit like bad about that.
Well, one of the things that comes from experiences like that, where you're training the mental part of your physique, is the confidence that you get the next time, right? So if you go through a situation, in this case, you are successful in going through it. You didn't blow up. You didn't bonk. Now you have confidence if that situation ever does arise again, or if you do have a bonk and it's a bad situation, you can know that this is the worst that can happen going into that if something goes wrong. So I think it does, just like training your body, those mental exercises makes your brain stronger too.
Yeah, and I think it does give you, once you've experienced something bad, you can expect to feel it again. And then the next time you feel it, it doesn't feel as bad. So, I mean, I can certainly say that every time after that, going through Last Chance, I put my own bottle top on. Right. That was just that was like, okay, no, I got it. I'll put my bottle. Like, that was almost a superstition. Like, I don't want some guy hammering on my bottle. But of course, it's never happened since. I've run 100 ultras since then. No one's ever broken my bottle before. It was an accident. It was an accident, and accidents happen. But it was a learning experience, and I'll take it with me in every ultra I run from now on.
I am not going to say a brand name, but I can guarantee you I know what brand water bottle that was, because I've had a water bottle, I think, that is the same brand that did the same thing where I did it myself. I hit the top of it and it busted right around the ring there and the top flew off.
Right. At the risk of outing any particular bottle companies, I think we're thinking of the same company.
And I will tell you, even to this day, I still use those water bottles because they're my favorite. I that did not deter me at all.
Right.
So if the takeaway from this, what would I label this golden nugget? Would I have a name for it, so I could, if I'm running along the trail and I'm trying to call back to that wonderful story, what would I call this nugget?
Training the mind.
Good. Okay. Got it. Good. So, Scott, you and I are next. Do we Rochambeau? Do we let Andy point? You want me to go?
You go first, Don. You go first, Don.
Okay. You got it. Okay. So, I actually wrote mine down because I was thinking, I had a number of them. I had a bag full of nuggets. Now, the quality of the nuggets, well, you know, they weren't real strong, but I had a lot of them that I could choose from.
How big a bag?
Okay. I wrote this down to kind of remind myself how I might talk about this. And now that I'm reading it, it makes absolutely no sense. I must have really been in a good spot as I was writing this down. But I said, reach into your hydration pack and pull out the ego and put in your reality check. Okay. Mm. That's where I'm going. And I'm going to talk about recognizing in real time your limits and quit running on the clock and start running by intuition and feel. And the last thing you need to worry about are the people around you, last year's race, or expectations. You need to be plugged into your body and listening to everything that's going on around you. And so I say, pull out the ego and throw it away out of that pack and put in a reality check where you can say, how do I feel? I'm at mile X and I have to go to 10X. Can I do this? Be honest with yourself and think about not what you've done in the past, but what about your training? How's your sleep been? How's that injury going? I'm not trying to be negative. I'm trying to give you, and I try to do this for myself, a reality check. And it becomes a race with me, myself, against the trail, against the elements of the day, the sun. I'm racing a mountain and I'm just enjoying the process. And whether I get done in a personal best or two times personal best, it doesn't matter. What about that experience that you're out there? So I think of myself, and I've thought of this as I try to manage early. Like I'm a piece of fine crystal and I can't veer too much outside of being just in that perfect zone. And I say fine crystal because it really can't take a hard knock or it shatters. And once it shatters, once you shatter your physiology or your psychology out in the middle of a long, hard day, you've blown up. So you've got to stay right in the lane, right in the pocket. Scott.
I just want to know. I mean, you've talked enough philosophy here, Freeman. I want to know the story that comes along with this learning.
Oh, I mean,
this is a story about the nugget. So you've talked about I want to know the story. That's what
you don't
I
think
want.
I had my. You don't think I had a story coming? Had you not asked that question, I would have been in the middle of the story.
Oh, okay.
So let's roll I think with of the story. My, are you tired of my lead in here? My intro?
No. The lead in was so perfect, Don. It was so perfect.
Here comes the story. So I think of myself as this crystal that any bump could just shatter the day. And so I think of myself as catastrophe is always on the horizon. At anything at any moment could take me out for the rest of the day. So I have to be right in that zone or that pocket. That's right where I was with you before, Scott. So now let me tell you the story.
Okay.
So I trained for a 100-mile race, and it was RDL, so not a very climbing race. There's maybe 11,000 feet of trail of climb on it, so not too bad.
Rio del Lago, 100-miler here in Northern California.
11,000 feet of elevation, and I hadn't trained that much. In fact, I run like three times a week, and my longest run was 15 miles. So I wasn't really, wasn't in a spot where I could make a mistake. You know, when you're that out of shape, that they're really, and there was only one run that was 15 miles. The rest,
if you can't hear, Coach Andy is laughing his guts out right now. So keep going, Don. Keep going.
And so this isn't safe for the children. Don't try this at home. And so I realized to myself that I can't make any mistakes. There's no room for mistakes. The better shape you're in, you could dip down into some problems and you're in a well enough shape to pull yourself back out, to recognize it. You're in tough shape. Use all your tools. Start to feed yourself. Slow down. Pour water on you. Do all the things that you know how to do and bounce back, and you can finish and do well like Andy did coming up Devil's Thumb. So I was in a spot where I had to, we were talking to Phil Maffetone at the time about low heart rate. And so I put a heart rate monitor on, and I told myself I will stay at 125 beats per minute and I won't go any higher than that. I don't care if I'm slow. I don't care if I'm the slowest guy. This is a challenge about running 15 miles and running, being able to run 100 miles. And so I'm going to keep my heart rate there. And I did. And it was low. And I have the heart rate, except on a couple of climbs. I was down in between 120 and 130, pretty flat. I was pretty proud of that. And I ended up finishing that race well. I was happy with the performance because I was flat all the way through. I didn't bonk. It pulled off and it worked because I controlled my effort and I didn't try to stretch myself, run to last year, or try to hit where the people that I think I should be running with, I should be running with that group. So I'm just going to put myself in there. I had a different agenda. I had catastrophe on the horizon. I was fine crystal. And anything that took me out of that, I'd have been done for the race. I only had one mistake. I had one mistake, and that's all I could afford. So I couldn't take that one mistake. Go ahead.
Hey, how important was the heart rate monitor for you that day? I mean, we all know that have played with heart rate monitors, you can kind of guess what your heart rate is by perceived effort. How important was that heart rate monitor that day?
It was my pacer. Really, I just ran to that. You know, some people run to, I want to be at this aid station at this time. I want to run this per mile rate on this type of the course. I just said, I don't care what happens. I need to stay in this range.
I love, Don, your phraseology of, I can't remember if you said pull out or throw out the ego, but I think that's the name of this nugget is whatever. Like, I just had this vision almost of pulling a cork out of a bottle and just tossing it away. Like, you're just exercising that part of the experience that's about you and expectations and someone else thinking you should do something. You take that and you throw that away, and all you're doing is saying, look, I've only run a long run of 15 miles, and now I'm going to try to run 85 miles further than that. Like, any rational person would say, I have no business doing that, and yet I'm going to do it. And that takes a certain surrender. What you did is surrender to the experience. And you used your heart rate, you used your breathing, you used your knowledge of the course, you knew how much time you had to get it done, and you got it done. But the key was tossing out that ego. You didn't care what position your name was going to be on the results. You didn't care if there was going to be anybody there cheering for you at the finish. You didn't care about any of that stuff. At some point, you said, ego, you're out of here. I am in this experience. And I think that's the wisdom of this nugget.
Well, you know, and part of it was kind of an experiment of one. It was the one race where I wanted to stay. Okay, I'm going to try what Phil Maffetone said. I'm going to keep my heart rate low, and maybe I'm more efficient. Maybe I don't have a real slow at the end. I didn't walk at the end because I was, you know, I didn't have those real low spots. It was just a level. It was a level, and, you know, steady as it goes, it worked. And so, you know, I've not done that every time. I've gone back to the old way where I did pack the ego and I did start out too fast and I did burn up in the middle and try to put myself together with a long, slow slog. But so it doesn't mean I mastered that part of endurance running, but I did practice it once and it really worked well.
Although this is the nugget of throwing out the ego is applicable to even a novice runner, I want to put a little clarity on there. This was not Don's first 100-mile race. Very experienced at the distance and very experienced at many different distances. So it's not this was his first 100-miler and the longest he had ever run is 15 miles. We're not advocating that at all.
No, but I will say, and you guys join in on this part, what is experience isn't just the number of years you run, but learning to listen to small clues that are coming in early that this is a overheating problem. This is a nutrition problem. This is a sodium problem. This is a hydration problem. You know, this is a rock in my shoe that if I don't stop now, it's going to slow me. You have to be on alert, high radar, high visibility of anything getting close that you push it back before it becomes a problem. Because every problem, except for a fall, starts slowly and gradually creeps up until it sits on you. And the sooner that you can identify it, the better, quicker you can handle it and quicker you can move away so it doesn't affect you. And that's the true veteran experience, I think, is the ability to pick up on things. And think of Carl Metzler. Could you imagine 100 hundreds, and he's won 100 of them. What does his radar look like? Probably amazing. AJW.
Scott, I have to agree. We're not advocating you can run a long run of 15 miles and finish 100. I mean, Don is an incredibly seasoned runner. I think what is important to say, though, is the wisdom of being like, of tossing the ego out.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's ultra or your 500th ultra. I mean, we've talked about Carl a couple. I've seen Carl throw his ego out. Even Carl Meltzer with all those 100-mile wins. You know, it was a few years ago. He was going for the 50-year and older Doug Latimer's record at Western States. And he realized by the time he got to Forest Hill that he was not going to get it. He put his ego aside and he still finished the race. He didn't just drop out. He didn't just, you know. So I think there's a lesson for the new runner just coming into the sport, as well as the long-term veteran who's been around for a long time, that if you can, as you said, pull that ego out, pop the cork out of the bottle and toss it away, you're going to end up having a better experience. And ultimately, I mean, Don, I would imagine that you had a better time taking in nutrition during that race. You maybe spent a little time at the aid stations chatting with people. Like, it's a very enjoyable experience when you're, when you surrender yourself to it like that.
Now, you have a 100-mile race coming up, AJW. Don't you, in a week or so?
I do in a couple of weeks out in Wyoming. Yep.
How is your preparation? How do you feel? How do you assess your body and say, which AJW, what fitness level is moving through, and how am I going to run the race based on my preparation? Have you pieced that together and painted that mosaic of a image out?
Not quite yet. I'm so, as I've gotten further into the sport, I tend to wait a longer before the beginning of the race to do that. I'm going to run a 100K race on Saturday, which would not, again, wouldn't be conventional wisdom to run a 100K race 13 days before a 100-mile race. But a big reason I'm doing that is to do exactly what you're talking about, gauge my fitness, you know, get dial in my gear, figure things out. And I should have a pretty good idea after this 100K. It's a relatively mountainous 100K on Saturday. What kind of shape I'll show up with at Bighorn on the 18th.
A question: Would you? You're in the middle of the 100K. You're at 60K into it of the 100K, and all of a sudden things are falling apart a little bit. And let's hope that it doesn't happen. But if it does, do you push yourself through, or do you pull early so you preserve yourself for the 100? And we're not going to compare the ego the same as this, as we said, toss it out. Do you push yourself through that so you can ensure yourself? I know there's going to be a dip in the race. I want to work through a dip. How are you mentally going to approach if you enter a low spot at 60K of the 100K?
I will finish it. I might just readjust expectations. I might just walk it in. I might just look at what the cutoffs are and just make sure I finish within the cutoffs, but I won't not finish. You know, I won't go hard enough at the beginning to make it so that I would be in jeopardy of not finishing. So I think I'd dose out the effort enough to make sure that I was able to run the race well. I mean, if things go really badly, then I just walk it in. And if things are so bad that I'm going to miss the cutoffs, then that's another reality I have to deal with. But I'm not going into it thinking that's going to happen. I'm going into it thinking it's a good long 17-hour training run.
So we do a race that's shorter than our long race. Do you feel, I'm interested in your answer here, and I'd like to compare it to mine, and I don't even know if I have it yet, that you feel that finish is necessary to give you confidence for the 100? So I need to walk this, and I need a win on this distance so that I know with absolute certainty that when I stand at the 100-mile mark of the start line, that I know that's in the bag and I have that behind me. Do you think there's a mental?
Yeah. For sure. I mean, finishing. Look, finishing a 100K, a mountainous 100K, 2 weeks before a 100-miler in 17 hours gives you a huge boost of confidence. Especially, you know, I'm 53 years old. I have two, artificial hips. You never know. You never know when things are going to go off the rails. So I constantly need to be, you know, checking in on my systems and making sure that I'm good to go by race day. I mean, as part of been my buildup all through this kind of, I've done a handful of 50Ks in the winter, a 3-day stage race in March, and two pretty hard 50-milers in April and May. So I think I'm going into this 100K, like I can handle the distance, but I want to just make sure, you know, all the systems are working, especially my handling nutrition and processing calories and making sure I manage the climbs and, you know, doing like the intangibles using poles, wearing a pack, you know, things that I don't do a ton that are just important to have dialed in before your 100-mile race.
Good, good. All right. Thanks for all that. Those were good, some good dialogue, and thanks for sharing that.
We're going to take a short break from our golden nuggets to talk to you about the BOA Fit system. You need to listen to this message.
I just put on the La Sportiva Cyclone that's equipped with the BOA Fit system. I slid my foot in and dialed in my fit, and the shoe just snugged around my entire foot like they were made for one another. No more laces, no more tying, and no more tying along the trail.
I knew that the BOA Fit system, lacing system, was efficient and easy to use, but what I was surprised with and what was unexpected is the fit and the performance that I got out of my La Sportiva Cyclones when I put them on my feet, dialed them in, and I started running down the trail like these shoes were part of my foot.
I absolutely love them, and you should check them out too.
And we feel so passionately about these that we have worked with BOA Fit System to give away 10 free pair of the La Sportiva Cyclones. This is how you do it. Get your paper and your pencil out. Go to BOAFit.com/TRN and you can register to win one of these 10 pair. We'll be giving away these La Sportiva Cyclones mid-July.
And now back to the Gold Nuggets with AJW. Scott, I think you're up. So far, let's do a countdown. The name of the two nuggets, the names of the nuggets, AJW, since you're tracking.
Well, we have the train the mind. The importance of training the mind. And I don't know, we might not want to work on your title, but I think throw out the ego.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm good with that. All right, Scott, let's listen to your story. Okay. AJW, I'm glad you and I went first because I would hate to be in third position here. I mean, he helped direct this. He said, go ahead, AJW. Oh, now you, Don, because he knows he's coming strong.
Yeah.
This has got to be a heck of a nugget.
I've already trained my mind and I've thrown out my ego, and you all should know that I'm a back of the packer. So my expectations are already set. And here's mine. I actually have a name for mine already, and you guys can vote at the end with a thumbs up or thumbs down if it applies. But the name of my golden nugget is Be Prepared. You know, the old Boy Scout motto, Be Prepared. And I have two stories that I'm going to relate. They're short stories that I'm going to relate that taught me about how to be prepared. The first one was, I think, the second ultra that I did. It was a 50K called the Ruckachuck Roundabout, and it follows part of the Western States course, which is Forest Hill, which is mile what on the Western States course?
62.
It goes down to the river, which is mile
78,
and then it turns around and it goes back up. So it's a 50K race. And I have run that section many times before, and it was a great race. And unfortunately, the first part is mostly downhill. There's a few little uphills, but it's mostly downhill. And I flew. I was having the greatest day in the whole world, and got to the river and turned around, and I started back up for the last 25K back up to Forest Hill. One of the things the race director told us was one of the aid stations was not accessible to crew or to aid station workers. There was going to be nothing there but some water bottles, some water jugs that you could fill up your water bottles. Well, it wasn't a great return 25K. And by the time I got to that aid station, no water. My water bottles were empty. It was a hot day, and there was no water at that aid station, which I was prepared for. I needed water, and I sat there, and as I'm sitting there having a pity party, a couple other runners that were also having a bad time and also empty, they looked at their water bottles, they looked at all the empty water jugs, and we all just kind of went, now what are we going to do? And I seriously sat down at that aid station and thought, okay, I don't think I can make it. And how are they going to come get me? Are they going to bring a horse down and pick me up? Are they going to use a helicopter to come get me? And all of these things didn't play well in my mind. I thought it would take longer for a horse or a helicopter to get me. So I just started walking in. I ended up finishing the race. I came in second to last at that race. So my point is I shouldn't have banked on or counted on there being water there. I needed to be more prepared. The second story, and this is also a quick one.
I got a question. So yeah. what are you suggesting you should have done? Should you have carried a canteen with you, or, you know, extra water? What are you going to do with that, Scott? I think that was just bad circumstances.
Well, I think that I could have had an extra water bottle on me. I could have used a hydration vest, which I have been accused at poo-pooing on this podcast. I love hydration vests, by the way. But I should have been more prepared. I shouldn't have counted on there being water there. I should have, like Andy just said, maybe I should have conserved on my liquid consumption up to that aid station until I verified that there was water there.
Let me just retrace part of the story. You run down to the river, which has water in it. You could have drank from the river, Scott.
There were aid stations down there. No, there were aid stations along the way. This was just an aid station on the way back up that was
okay. Gotcha.
I left the river with two full water bottles.
Gotcha. Okay. I don't mean to slow your roll here. I don't want people to lose sight of your nugget.
Here's the other story that taught me how to be prepared. And this was a training run that I went on with my good friend Don, and also part of the Western States course. And we were running from Michigan Bluff to, I think, Devil's Thumb that day, which is about how many miles, guys? You guys know
10,
the course.
10, mile 55 out to 45-ish, right?
That's and impressive. Then,
well, I mean, wait, you got to remember five of them.
Anyway, we had run down and we were on our way back, and this was in the early spring, and there was a lot of deadfall. And one of the deadfalls that was across the trail was a pretty low deadfall that required you to go down almost on your hands and knees. On the way back, on the way down, we navigated it properly. On the way back up, I came up a little bit too quick and I hit my head on a broken branch that was sticking out of this tree, and it hurt so bad. And once I hit myself, I kind of got down on my hands and knees, and you know how you grab your head and you just go, "Oh, that hurt. Oh, that hurt." And as I'm sitting there holding my head, complaining about how much it hurt, I started to feel a puddle developing on the ground. And I thought, did I break my water bottle? What's going on? Well, it was a stream of blood, not a drip of blood, a stream of blood. I had ripped open my skull, and I thought, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. I still have probably a mile and a half, 2 mile climb up to Michigan Bluff. Actually, we started at Forest Hill that day, Don. And I thought it's going to take a long time. Luckily, I was prepared that day. And in the little fanny pack that I had some wet wipes that I would use for bio breaks. And I was able to take those out and put on my head and compress that as we climbed the rest of the way out to Michigan Bluff. We were lucky enough to find a homeowner there that gave us a ride in her car, as terrible as we looked, back to Forest Hill. And I was able to get to the emergency room. And I think I got 10 staples put in my head that day. So that's my story.
Man. Wow.
So be prepared. I was prepared with some supplies so that if I didn't, I probably would have had to take off my shirt and use that as a compress.
You know, I was behind. Scott was having a fantastic day that day, and I was running behind him. I was not having a great day, and he was having an exceptional.
The only time Don has ever run behind me, by the way.
So quite a gap. Well, no, not actually, but in this case, yes. And I was chasing him, and I saw this blood on the ground, and I said, "Wow, there's something has happened up here." And then I run across another run and come the other way, and they go. The runner said, "There's a runner up there. He's holding the top of his head, and there's blood everywhere." And I thought, "Oh no, you know, there's a good chance that might be Scott. I'm thinking to myself, and my pace picked up, even though at least my effort picked up. I don't know if my pace picked up. And then I find Scott there at the place there at the top of that hill, and he was just covered in blood. And I'm looking for this picture now. Scott, I can't find it. I hope you have it, because we've got to show it to Andy, and we'll put it in the show notes, please. So good.
I think preparation. I really appreciate this nugget, because we can only prepare so much. And as much as I mean, Scott, those examples are awesome, but nobody would have expected you to come up to the Cal 2 aid station and have the water be gone. Right? Nobody would have.
How did you know it was Cal 2? How did you know it was Cal 2? It was Cal 2.
Well, that's.
I never
said
that.
Because that's where the aid stations always are. But it probably if you'd gone down 100 yards to the right behind the big tree, there were a couple of jugs that Dan Williams left down there like 15 years ago. But that's another example of being prepared. But I mean, being prepared for getting your head gashed by a tree across the trail on the climb out of El Dorado is that's a big ask. I think what your two stories say is, yes, be prepared, but also be ready. I think the part two of being prepared is be ready to improvise or be ready to go to plan B, right? Your plan B when you got to Cal 2 and after you had your pity party was, I'm going to just walk this in and you finish second to last. And your plan B was, when you got your head gashed in, was to, you know, figure out a way to stop the bleeding and get to Michigan Bluff and get a drive back to Forest Hill and go get your 10 staples, right? We all need a plan. We all need a plan B, right? And in a way, all three of our nuggets are about plan B, right? Whether it's, and it might even be plan C and plan D. And that's a big part of life, right? So whether it's Don thinking about, you know, what it means to, you know, check your ego. I mean, he started the race with his ego in the bottle and realized, you know what, I'm going to pitch this ego, and that's going to be my plan B. Right. And for me, like I want totally to get through the race completely physically. Like, it's all about physical. It's all about how in shape I am and how I've ended it. But you know what? This dude busted my bottle, and all of a sudden it became a mental game, and I had to be prepared mentally, and it was a plan B. And so maybe the essence, maybe the theme of this whole first episode of the Nugget Cast is, make sure you have a plan B. And here are some nuggets to help you prepare to have a plan B.
Boy, I think we need to wrap that up. We should put a stamp on that one. Go ahead, Don.
Well, I think that was a close. I recognize a strong close when I hear one, and I think that's exactly what it is. And so I think we should all be prepared for the unknown and be okay with it and think of it as the opportunity. Back to Ann Trason, you know, the best long distance trail runners are problem solvers, because you're going to be hit with problems all the time. And the sooner than you can recognize your problem, the smaller the problem is. And the longer you wait for it, the bigger and harder it is to change. So become a problem solver. And Ann Trason, no doubt, was a master problem solver. Ask any of the 14 cougars that she has on her mantle.
So just a couple of questions. First for you, Scott, how long did it take you to slog back from Cal 2 uphill with no water?
I don't know. It was a long time. My family was up at Forest Hill waiting for me, and they started getting worried. It started getting dark, Andy, and they were wondering, wait, where is he? Where is he? And, there were some runners many runners that passed, and they were able to say, no, there's still some slow pokes out there. Don't worry. They're moving in one direction. They're not going backwards.
But just know this, Andy, it's still faster than the 2020 Western States that Terry Tosh and I did of the slowest known time. He still beat us. We still own that section of Strava for the slowest known time. Although it's the opposite direction.
Well, that's why I was asking, because he probably went faster uphill from Cal 2 to Forest Hill than you guys went down it.
Yeah, but you know what? That's because we didn't have egos in our pack. We had a great time as friends. Well. We had so much fun. And you know what? I run a number of races. That was no doubt the slowest, but probably the most satisfying.
We've talked about it.
So my other question, my other question is for you, Don. Yes, the word of wisdom is to pull the ego out and toss it. But after all the ultras all the experiences you've had, can you still run a race and keep that ego in?
Oh, you know, I think after a certain birthday, my ego was. Taken from me. I don't know if I have that thing anymore. It's easy when you don't own one.
You know, I would say there's not too many older runners out on the trail that have egos left, because the trail humbles, right?
Mm, good point.
Yeah.
I mean, what I've shared on this podcast before is when I run races now and people come up on me and they're like, "Hey, you're AJW." And they say, "What are you doing all the way back here?" Like that, my initial reaction is, "Oh, wow, I should be faster." And then I just embrace it. And I'd be like, "Well, you know what? This is the runner I am right now. And I'm probably going to be this runner for a long time. So get used to seeing me back here."
Yeah. So AJW's full circle is, in the beginning, he stood on the podium and now he carries the podium to the truck.
That's right. Now that's a good close.
we hope that the Nugget cast was enjoyable for you. We're going to try this and do a few episodes with some runners and some guests that we're going to be bringing on here, that they're going to share their nuggets and their stories of how they learned that golden nugget. And we hope that it's enjoyable. You have a little fun, you have some laughs, and maybe you learn something or two.
I did tonight. So thanks, AJW. It's always great to have you as a co-host and part of the team here. It sure is easy when you sit in that chair. So thank you.
And thanks, Don and Scott, for putting up with my technology challenges, as always. And this was fun. So, hey, get out there and run Mass.
Hey, this podcast wouldn't be possible without a few people. First of all, our Patreon subscribers, we want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Secondly, we want to thank our producer, Doug Mayer, and his dog, Izzy, who reside in Chamonix at the base of the Alps, and they run a great company there called Run the Alps. You should go there.
And we'd like to give a special thanks to our new sound man, Ryan, who's making this thing happen and making us sound good, Scott. This podcast was originally 2 hours and 46 minutes long.